Okay, run. Okay, you ready?
Three. Extra
Banana.
Extra Banana.
Extra
Banana.
Michelle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right. I've hit that lull in the afternoon, you know, when you start to feel a little bit, not boozy. What's the word I'm looking for?
I have no idea. Woozy.
Yeah.
Woozy.
I feel tired, woozy. Michelle. I feel tired. I'm not doing anything. It's this bloody lockdown, I tell you. Sorry to go on about it.
Oh, I honestly prefer not to because it's so boring. Although saying that, I did watch Queens in lockdown.
And I suggested that. It was great, wasn't it? You got to see Veronica Green's lovely husband who gave her COVID, which meant she couldn't then go back on the show. Poor thing.
I know, but you also saw her so depressed, couldn't get out of bed, even though the husband brought her a brew. And Every morning he brought her a brew. I know, he was quite sweet. The big shocker, though.
Ginny Lemon in a thruple.
Out of all the queens, Ginny,
three
really?
Yellow-haired versions of Ginny, basically, all look the same. And she, as she pointed out, they have sex in the garden, they have sex in the house, they have sex upside down, all the way around. It was quite confronting for me.
But also, I just thought, with Ginny, fancy a slice? No, thank you. I don't want a slice of that.
I was looking forward to the snatch game for Ginny because I felt if she didn't do an early version of Elton John, then she would have been missing a massive trick.
Yeah,
rocking and bopping to the crocodile rock, yeah. That version.
Oh, I can imagine her doing that. But you know what? She fucked up with her really terrible Australian weather girl. It was fucking stupid.
I mean, a lot of people love to go into an Australian accent for fun, and it's great fun. I love it too.
Oh,
don't
yeah,
you love? Do you like it?
I like doing an Australian accent.
But I feel like we're allowed because we are fucking Australian. So bring it on. That's my Scottish.
Oh, that's your Lewis. No, Lawrence. Lawrence Cheney.
Lawrence Cheney.
Lawrence Cheney. Anyway,
bring it on. Go left, go right, go straight ahead.
You do that well. You could have been on Trainspotting. Anyway, so my dear.
This is our Valentine's episode, Michelle, even though it's not Valentine's Day anymore. Yeah, we know, all right.
Yeah, but before that, we got any apologies?
Oh, apologies.
Well, I've got just a little one.
Just, go on.
Just to my Valentine, because I know he got a bit upset when I told him.
Has he listened? I mean,
no, he bloody hasn't listened and he never will.
He'd be leaving you if he had.
I know, it's true. But I said to him, I mentioned it on the podcast, you didn't know who Steven Spielberg was. And he fucking flipped. He's like, I did. I just didn't know his movies. And I thought.
Well, that's kind of the same thing, mate.
It is the same thing. But I have to apologise. I have to put it out there. Otherwise, there won't be another Valentine's Day for me.
Sorry, little dude.
Oh,
but speaking of Spielberg, Michelle, do you know what I did last night
with my entire
family of there's two small children? We watched
Close Encounters.
Yeah, we watched it. Yeah, not
what
it.
Did you think?
They want to watch it. I'm saying no, you can't watch it.
No, I can't even
watch bloody it. I'm scared of clowns. It was 2 hours and a half, but I think I watched a collector's edition because there was a lot of scenes I didn't remember.
That could just be age. But
I swear to God. There were scenes, and even at the end, I'm pretty sure you didn't get to see those aliens as much as you did.
Well, I didn't watch a collector's edition. I just watched normal, and there were quite a lot of aliens. I don't know. I have to go back and look. It was long. This is why I was thinking, come on, snip it up. Cut to the chase.
I want to see those aliens. It seemed different to the version that I saw, definitely.
Oh, okay.
But actually, Paddy, my other husband.
You're in a thruple now. You and Ginny Lemon and Paddy. No.
The third person in my quadruple, he said, is the little boy related to Richard Dreyfuss, the main actor, Roy Neary? The main character, his son, who was crying in the mashed potato scene, they look so similar. Well, it's got the same last name. I googled it. It's his nephew.
Oh, there you go. You're a sleuth. Yeah. You're a film sleuth.
Yeah.
Any apologies for you?
Oh, well, I'd have to correct something that I said last week. A lovely listener by the name of Vicky got in touch and said that it wasn't a parable that I said about the frog and the otter or whatever it was, or the spider or whatever called it. No, the...
You said a frog...
A scorpion. And a duck.
And a squirrel.
And a duck or something. And she said, that's actually a fable. And she corrected me. And then you and I figured it out because we were both like, oh, where have I heard that recently?
Yeah.
Not on Friends, not on Drag Race. It was on Afterlife with Ricky Gervais.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course it was. Ew. Yeah, he was good in that. I mean, he's always good in everything. I love him.
I wish he wouldn't slick his hair back.
Oh, right. It started to upset me.
Do
you know what? I would actually go there.
Would you?
I would. I like a funny guy. I do. Okay. I would go there. And actually, he was quite funny. He was talking about he's got these pajamas where he just pops his penis through the little hole in the garage. I quite liked it.
Most men have got pajamas like that, haven't they?
What, do they just pop the penis
through? There's a little hole there for that precise reason.
No.
Because they're so lazy, they can't even be bothered to take their trousers or pants down. That's why there's a slit for it to just pop out.
No, I think this might have been from overwear. A wear hole.
Yuck. Its way free.
I like Ricky. Listen. Anyway. Well, look, thank you, Vicky. No, I was going to say thank you, Vicky.
Yes. And her nephew, she's also got her nephew Callum listening, who's a young man.
Oh, yeah. We got what? We got people under 30 listening.
We've got a young person listening. And he loves it. Hi, Callum. I said I'd give him a shout. Now, also, I mentioned a new listener, Terry, who I used to work with in fashion. Now, he lives in Berlin and he listens all the time. He rings me with live shouting back with the earphones in after a long day at work and a few beers usually. And he leaves messages for me. He's in his Australian accent, even though he's not Australian. And then he told me that he was listening to the fairies episode, which I think was the first episode of the year, Michelle.
Okay. Yes, it was. Yeah. It was.
He got to the part where we'd said something like, oh, people who've done podcasts on fairies find that things go wrong. And he, at that time, was peeing in a cemetery on his way home. What do you think happened? I know. He turned around. He tripped over. I'd like to think that his willy was still out. And pee was still peeing. And hurt him. I don't know if his head bounced off the pavement. I just think I'm making that up. It's because I saw my husband do this once at the Cambridge Folk Festival.
Oh, my God.
He was peeing in a bush, waving at me.
He loved the nature.
His best mate came up behind me, like, giving me the thumbs up, pushed him. But my husband forgot to take his hands off his willy, was still weeing. I watched his little head bounce off the pavement, and he was still weeing, but he was laughing. He thought it was so funny. Well, he had to go and have stitches in hospital. We were in hospital till 6 a.m. that morning, so it wasn't that fucking funny.
Oh, Jesus. Jesus Christ. Do you think that happened to poor Terry Terrence?
That's what I imagined when he told me what happened to him, but I'm sure it wasn't that dramatic.
So basically, the fairies fucked with him. I mean, quite frankly, he shouldn't have been pissing in a cemetery. But anyway.
Very disrespectful, Terry.
If it's not the fairies, the fucking evil Satan devils are going to get him. So, you know.
There you
ghosts.
Go. Valentine's Day. It's not Valentine's Day anymore.
No, it's not. But did you have a good one? Did you get anything?
I got a card. We had oysters and champagne. Ooh, and nice. I was in a filthy mood.
Because that's what oysters would do to you.
Well, there was always that fear, isn't there, that you might die. One of them might be off.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Don't eat them then.
No, I must eat them. I love them.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I had what did I do? Oh, we walked up the mountain, had a glass of champagne in fucking minus 17 because it's freezing and lockdown. So you're not allowed to sit down. You can have a takeaway. So we had a takeaway champagne.
Oh, what?
We were freezing our fucking tits off. But, you know, it was slightly romantic because we decided to get all smoochy. So that was nice. But, you know, obviously when we were talking about this episode, we were thinking, what can we do for Valentine's Day?
Yeah. So, and those bastards, our fans, our eavesdroppers.
Oh,
I'm sorry to call you bastards. I'm so sorry. But where were you with your fantastic stories?
We needed you. We got, well... We got one.
We did get one, yeah.
And it's a good one. But we're going to save the best.
It'll outdo all of them, exactly. So because of that, Michelle, as you probably well know, I had to plumb the depths of the sun for my fantastic love story.
Well, I'll just preface, it's Valentine's Day. It's really more about love. But is it really about love? Or is it about...
sex. Money.
Love no. gone wrong, I was going to say. It's not all chocolate and roses.
No, it's not worth talking about unless it's gone terribly wrong.
That's right. All right, take it away.
As I said, this is from an article in The Sun from November last year, 2020.
Okay.
Only last year, me. So this is about a lady called Tracy Bottomley, who's 46, from Shipley, West Yorkshire.
Okay.
And she is set to marry a man she hasn't met yet through a pen pal scheme. So far, so cute.
Okay.
It's like an old-fashioned kind of, what do you call those things that you go on and you swipe left and right?
Tinder?
Tinker. Tinder.
Tender. It's tender.
Tender. Tender love and care. It's the old-fashioned version of that, isn't it, really? The old pen pal scheme.
It is indeed. Alrighty.
So the object of her affections is a one Ernest Otto Smith, aged 53. He was jailed for life without parole for the murder of a man and woman in 2006.
Fuck off. She's in love with a fucking crim.
That's
what
right.
the hell?
Slim pickings. Tracy says, Ernest doesn't scare me. I've never been someone who gets frightened easily.
Okay.
Yes, he's a serial killer. He's committed a few murders. But I understand the risks of what could happen. And I still love him, Tracy
can I just,
said.
Can I just yes. pause and say... She's Please never do. Fucking met him.
I still love him. Well, I guess they've had chit-chats on the phone or
oh,
however else
yes.
you can contact them.
Yeah, but ever heard of catfishing? Anyway, moving on.
Oh, yes. Well, I saw the pictures anyway. He says he proposed in a voicemail from prison saying, "You're crazy just like me, so we should be married. What do you think?" Did you understand my accent?
I thought they were from West Yorkshire.
She is. He's from... What did I say? He's... Oh, I haven't said yet where he's from. He's from Ohio. Well, he's in prison in Ohio.
What? They're yeah. not even in the same fucking country.
No!
Oh, my God. All right.
Tracy hopes to fly to the US before the year is out to marry the convicted murderer at the Ohio Department of Prisons. Well, good luck with that, Tracy, because of lockdown.
Romance.
That's the least of your fucking problems, if you ask me.
I think that she's being saved from fucking...
Right, this is where we have to stop laughing now, Michelle. Okay. The lovebirds bonded over trauma. No. Trauma from abuse they have suffered. So it's very sad.
Oh, do you know what?
They both suffered from a traumatic childhood.
But Geordie, you know this from listening to all the murder podcasts that we listen yeah. to. All of these serial killers and abusers, they've all been abused as kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's terrible.
Murderers who are made. Yeah. Ernest also spoke about what he'd been through and how he was a victim of child abuse, which led to him using drugs to battle his depression and anxiety. She says, "I've been in an abusive relationship before, and the way he spoke about how his experiences as a child changed him really resonated with me." Okay, this is the bit where we can start laughing again. She says, "One of the most shocking things I've ever read in black and white. Being killed isn't the best way to go, but everybody dies one day. I'm going to die eventually, and I don't mind the fact that it could be at the hands of him."
No!
She's pretty much inviting him.
Oh, but he's like, please murder me. Please slash my throat in the middle of the night.
I understand he might. Yeah, but he's not getting out, darling. He's on death row. There's no chance of him killing you for a start, so she shouldn't be worried.
But I love him. Oh, my God.
So basically, this bloke, Otis Smith, what was his name?
Otto.
Is that?
Otto.
Smith. He robbed, shot and killed a man called James Dillingham in Toledo, Ohio on January the 2nd, 2005.
Okay.
Smith was accompanied by Kathy Barnett. So she was probably his girlfriend. Mm. But he then murdered her, fearing she would tell the police of his crimes. He attempted to break Kathy's neck and beat her to death with a tree branch.
Fucking hell. He's a catch.
He was convicted in March 2006 in Ohio and sentenced to 32 years in solitary confinement in prison.
fuck, man.
That's how naughty he is.
I was going to say, you don't get put into solitary
for
32 confinement.
32 freaking years.
I mean, that's hardcore. That's like, why? I mean, that's when you just think he's just wasting tax resources being in solitary. there's no hope for even any kind of rehabilitation at that point, right, if he's in solitary.
Yeah.
Mm. Except
yeah, that's true,
Tracy. Actually. Tracy has like given him a new lease of life.
You're crazy. I'm crazy. Let's make it official. So this is a thing called hybristophilia, Michelle. We have spoken about this before privately, not on air.
That's the kind of conversations we have.
That's the sort of thing. That's why we're recording them. It's also called Bonnie and Clyde syndrome. It's basically a sexual disorder where you can only get off by having a partner known to have committed a crime, such as rape, torture, or murder.
Ew.
Mm-hmm.
Ew.
Some women who marry or admire serial killers are seeking fame by proxy. Or believe they can tame the wild beast.
I understand those two.
That's not hybristophilia.
No, that's just fame seeking and attention and probably trying to like sell book rights and all that kind of stuff. So I get that.
Many high profile criminals, particularly those who have committed atrocious crimes, receive fan mail in prison that is sometimes amorous or sexual, presumably as a result of this phenomenon. In some cases, admirers of these criminals have gone on to marry the object of their affection.
Jesus Christ. Bit like Tracy. Tracy and Otto.
Tracy. I watched this week on Netflix the Night Stalker documentary. I wouldn't advise that you do. He's not a good person, Michelle.
This is Ramirez, he's not nice. Isn't it? This
Richard
is,
Ramirez.
Yeah, fucking hell.
AKA the Night Stalker. Mm. In 1989... he looked like a rock star, I have to say, in the court by the time he got to court. But
I've seen pictures of him, and he's not a bad looking guy.
Except when he opens his mouth, and apparently he smelt like a goat.
Oh.
But he did some awful things, and I don't know if he had a bath between.
Oh, God. Georgie.
He was rank. But anyway, he was the one that called himself a Satanist.
Oh, yes.
He was clinging to this. And he's the one who met LaVey. Yeah. LaVey didn't want a bar of it.
No, he probably stank. He was like, you smell like a goat.
Stay there.
<off."
laughs> He was sentenced to death on charges that included 13 murders, 5 attempted murders, and 11 sexual assaults. And I think I said to you previously that there were children involved, but they didn't take him to court for those things because they didn't want the surviving children, to have to go through the hell.
I mean,
and also, spoiler. They reckon that wasn't his first outing.
Fucking hell.
I think there's a heap more bodies under his watch.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, they get away with it. And then, you know, they often... I mean, have you watched Dexter? They kill and then they stop and then they kill and, you know... Brilliant show if you haven't seen it. Anyway.
I have seen it. Anyway, who cares? Thought freelance magazine editor Doreen Loy, who married him 7 years later. She didn't care about all that.
I don't care that you rape children and murder people.
I love him. She called him kind, funny and charming. But I mean, how much do you really get to know that person? Because they're not going to be like, you know, you left the toilet seat up again, or you're not going to have those conversations with that person because
you don't have the life
with them.
No.
What about Ted Bundy, the notorious serial killer who raped and murdered more than 30 women?
Well, I did a little digging on Ted Bundy.
They said he was attractive, right? I personally get it, but it's not for me, you ask.
I was about to say, would you go there?
No.
I've seen pictures of Ted Bundy. Look, he's not a bad looking guy. Mm. I wouldn't go there. If he looked more like Ricky Gervais with a slick back, maybe. But no, he looks creepy to me. He's got the old creep face, you know?
Well, yeah, to me creepy too. But that didn't deter the hundreds of women that sent fan mail from all around the world. While he was still on trial in 1980, he married one of his admirers, a twice divorced mother of two called Carol Ann Boone, and they had a baby together. And then he was executed for his crimes in 1989.
Well, I did a little bit of digging on Ted and Carol Ann.
Okay.
So apparently Ted Bundy and Carol Ann Boone first met when they were working together at the Department of Emergency Services in Olympia, Washington.
Are you sure about that?
In 1974. Yes.
Is she the one that wrote A Devil at My Side, or whatever it was called? A book about it?
No. This is a different one. But this is the one he married. So they had already met before.
They knew each other.
Yes. So this is a thing, right? So by day, serial killer Ted Bundy was helping authorities search for missing women because he was part of the emergency services, right?
The ones that he killed.
By night, he was the one murdering them.
Fucking hell.
I know. Fucking terrifying. But at this point, Carol Ann, who, as you said, she's a single mum, she just thinks Ted's this nice, quiet chap who she's sort of just hit it off with. Yeah. But nothing happens. They're just mates. Then fast forward to 1975 when the first charges were levelled against Bundy. Like you said, bear in mind, this is one of the world's most notorious serial killers, serial rapists, general, like, all-round sadistic sociopath. He, you know, he'd been finally been charged because he'd been getting away with it up until this point. But it's at this point, because Carol Ann had kept things platonic, but it was at that point that things got, like, romantic.
Ooh, hello, soldier. Ooh, he's a sailor.
So,
hello, murderer.
Oh, aren't you happy? I know, like, fucking, you know, she's got a head on her shoulders up until the point she knows he's murdered people. And then so, she's like, hello.
Hybristophilia.
However, yes and no, because in 1979, while he's on trial for more murders, like you said, they actually got married. But it was this weird kind of legal loophole, right? So she got up and said in court, I love you. And he said, will you marry me? And she said, yes. And apparently, if you do that in a court of law, it's a legal marriage.
You're married.
So it wasn't like bride, you know, bride dresses and he's in a groom and groom's tux or whatever. So anyway, while he was on death row in 1982, she had a little girl called Rose Bundy. The thing is, in loads of reports, Carol Ann always says that she believed that he was innocent.
Oh.
And I just can't help but think.
But did she?
Well, this is the thing. So he was super charismatic and, you know, had that sort of attraction. Women found him attractive, even though you and I wouldn't go there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think she was probably brainwashed. But then there was a point while he was on death row that Bundy got offered this deal, which was called Bones for Time, which meant if he could tell police where the bodies of his victims were, they
rather
would
than being executed.
Yeah, they would delay the death penalty. Okay. So he would have more time. But that's actually when the penny dropped for Carol Ann, because she was like, how the fuck are you going to tell the police where the bodies are if you didn't do the crimes? Yeah. And then she realized, fuck, I've been taken for a ride.
So he did tell them.
Well, I don't know, but after he was offered this deal, there must have been conversations between the two of them, because that was pretty much when she walked out on him and annulled the marriage. And then in 1989, I think they actually got a divorce, and she said she felt really betrayed and that she was just devastated by his confessions in his last days.
Jesus.
Right? Because she truly believed him when he said he didn't do any of the crimes. And she really thought he was innocent. So, I don't know. Gullible? Brainwashed? Just in love. But fucking hell, you know, you've got to make good choices, people.
Exactly. Now, what about that famous hottie, Joseph Fritzl, who imprisoned his daughter as a sex slave for 24 fucking years? Sorry. Anyway, he imprisoned his daughter as a sex slave for 24 harrowing years. He's received love letters from admirers, and so has the Yorkshire Ripper, Peter Sutcliffe. He's another one, though, who had a bit of a charm about him, they say.
Was he handsome?
They say he was. And again, Michelle, I'm not going to go there. I wouldn't have gone there with Peter Sutcliffe.
You're not going to waste your whole pass
not for
on
me.
That.
No. My what?
Your whole pass.
Certainly not.
Your wild card.
And there are also women who sent naked pictures to Charles Bronson. Now, we've spoken about Charles Bronson before. You thought he was an actor. Yes, he is. He's also a notorious Britain's most violent.
But they're two different people.
They are two different people. Violent prisoner. Now, he managed to kill someone while he was inside, I think.
What the
fuck? You find out about him?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I think he was that attractive that they had Tom. What's the guy's name? He's an actor.
Who?
Apparently, he was attending one of my children's assemblies because he had a godchild at the same school.
Oh, my God. Tom. You're in the midst of a murderer.
No, he's not a murderer. He's an actor.
Oh, that one.
He played the Cray twins, and he also played Charles Bronson, and he was Mad Max recently, and he had a grill on his mouth and a funny voice for Batman, and he's English, and he's got big shoulders, and he's married to a lovely girl who went to the same drama college as some friends of ours.
Oh, don't know.
Tom.
We'll come back. It'll come to you. By the end of the podcast, Tom. It'll come to you. Tom. Hello, Tom.
That guy, Tom, that's really famous. Tom Brody? Tom? No, he was in Taboo. Come on, Michelle, help me out.
Hang on, was he in Peaky Blinders?
Yes, he was the Jewish guy in Peaky Blinders.
No,
Tom.
Don't remember his name.
What's his name?
Moving on.
God, that's embarrassing. Very famous man. Mm. Ben Mendelsohn, write in and tell us who is Tom. Tom sure. Cox?
No. Jesus, let it go, Jordy. Let it go.
All right. Okay, moving on with actors and things. 2014, Charles Manson, our favourite crazy-faced psychopath. He died in 2017 after nearly 5 decades in prison, but he became engaged to a lovely 26-year-old woman by the name of Afton Elaine Burton, who also went by the name of Star.
Hang on. So he must have been in his late 70s at this
point. Oh, yes.
And she's 26.
Oh,
fucking
yes.
Hell. Okay, another question. Have you seen pictures of him?
Yeah.
He's actually not bad looking.
No, Michelle.
He's no Ricky Gervais, but come on.
Jesus.
He was all right when he was younger. Just
no,
saying.
He wasn't.
Oh, all right. Oh, I don't fancy a murderer, but I thought he was all right.
I can't really, don't even really know where to go from here. She ran a website called Release Charles Manson Now. The romance fizzled out. The couple's marriage license expired in a year later, amid tabloid rumours that Burton wanted to marry the killer so that she could put his body on display for profit after his death.
No. Okay, so this is not hybristophilia. This is just...
She wants to make some dollar.
Dollar. Cash dollar. Money.
Now, there was an actor who played Charles Manson in two things. One was Mindhunter, fabulous series that is on Netflix, only two series. Unfortunately, it's brilliant. I wish it was still on.
I need to watch it.
Please watch it. And the guy who played Charles Manson also played Charles Manson in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
The Quentin Tarantino film that was recently out. His name, he's Aussie. And his name is Damon Herriman. And he's not just one of those new kids off the block.
All right.
He's been acting since he was 4 years old. So no doubt you would have seen him in a Monte Carlo or an Arnott's Biscuit ad or something.
Jerry Ripe.
He was in the Sullivans and the old Flying Doctors.
Oh,
and he
my
had
God.
Nominated for three gold Logies, just three Logies, which is, as we all know now, is the Australian version of an Oscar. And he won for Best Juvenile Performance in The Flying Doctors. And later, he was cast as bespectacled best friend
of Ben Mendelsohn.
Ben Mendelsohn in the cult comedy classic The Big Steal.
Oh, my God.
He was with him in The Big Steal, which is apparently a cult classic comedy.
Oh, well, there you go. Bendels has got all sorts of connections. Goodness me. I just have two words for you at the moment.
What?
Tom Hardy.
Thank you. Did you Google him?
I did.
Hardy, Hardy, Hardy.
How did we fucking forget Tom Hardy? Anyway, there you go.
Oh, my God. Sorry, Tom. Because, he's listening.
He is. He and Ben hanging out together, listening. Right. Well, there you go. Fucking hell. Women who love murderers.
Yep.
Well, what about women who do crazy things when love goes wrong?
Okay, I bet there's a few of them.
Well, I'm just going to talk about one, probably one of the most famous ones.
I think I have a
If I do the chop, chop, chop.
Is she cut? Is she getting cut or is he getting cut?
Oh, Lorena Bobbitt.
Oh, he's getting the Bobbitt.
That's the
She done a Bobbitt on him.
That's the thing. Like, this case is so fucking insane. I mean, I remember when it happened. It was worldwide news. And
I remember she chopped it off and then she went for a drive and she threw it out the window. And did they find it to reattach it? I can't remember.
Well, I'm going to go through this case. Okay. For anybody, especially our young listeners like Callum, who may not know
Callum,
about this.
You need to get up to date on all these 80s.
It was 93, yes.
Okay. Just quickly though, Michelle, from memory, people thought that she was just mad, right? And did that out of jealousy or because he was going to break up with her. But was it that he was a horrible marital rapist or something?
Well, I'll get to that because it goes a little bit into it. So, yes, for anyone who's never heard of this case, on June 23, 1993, in Manassas, Virginia, I think that's how you say it.
Manassas.
I don't know. You have to say it like that. Manassas. Lorena Bobbitt went to bed with her husband, John Wayne Bobbitt.
So far, so good.
I know, but whenever I think of this guy, John Wayne Bobbitt, I just
Why
think
is he called
of
John Wayne.
Well, it just reminds me of John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, John Wayne Gacy, not John Wayne, whose actual real name was Marion.
What? Fucking hell. That is some trivia right there. Yeah. No, I always just think of John Wayne Gacy, who was that American serial killer.
Yeah, who liked to paint clowns.
He was a clown.
Oh.
He was known as Killer Clown. Yes, and he was basically a sex offender who assaulted and murdered at least 33 people, all young men and boys, and probably more. And the scary thing is that John Wayne Gacy would dress up.
He also enlisted people as well, didn't he, to do some dirty work
for him? Oh, did he? Fuck, I didn't get that deep into it. I just know that he had two clown personas, Pogo the clown and Patches the clown. And he would go to children's hospitals and do events where basically he would like hunt out his victims. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
So back to John Wayne Bobbitt. So one night after going to bed... Lorena Bobbitt got up for a glass of water, but on the way back, she picked up an 8-inch carving knife, went back to their bedroom and cut off his penis while he was asleep in his bed.
Casual as you like.
Thing is, like you said, after she'd given him the chop, Lorena jumped in the car, took the penis with her and drove away with it. But the thing is, apparently she was really struggling.
I'm having this.
So she was really struggling to drive, holding like the steering wheel and the penis. So she just chucked it out the window into a field.
How big was it?
I don't know. Big enough that she was having trouble, you know, making a left-hand turn.
Once you've cut the blood supply off it, there's not going to be much left of it at all, is there? Really? Because it's really mostly just full of blood. Yeah, I do. I do think that.
I don't know. Why don't you have a word with Lorena? Because she might be able to tell.
Somebody tell me. I bet there's pictures on the internet.
Oh, I don't even want to look at those pictures.
I want you to look. Do it now. Google it now. Next to Tom Hardy, you'll have dismembered penis.
Jesus. So, look, she freaked out, I think, after she chucked the old D out the window, and she called 911 and she told them what had happened and where she'd basically chucked the willy. So the police,
Did she chuck a willy? She's chucked a willy.
She chucked a willy, mate. She pinned it out the window. So the police decided they were going to do a search and rescue on the penis, and they found it. And they basically washed it down with antiseptic and packed it in ice and then scooted it off to the hospital where they managed to reattach it.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So, fuck knows if it actually works properly.
Frankenstein's penis.
Well, funny you should say that because John Wayne Bobbitt.
Didn't he become a porn star?
He did. He went on.
Oh, it's just come back to me.
He went on to star in two porno films in the 90s. And for our young listeners, that's when porno films actually existed. Because now it's all just, you know, Pornhub.
What is it
anyway?
Now?
But
what's
yeah,
hub?
Pornhub.
What's a hub?
Pornhub.
I don't know these things.
I'll bullshit.
I don't.
What is it? RedTube and Pornhub.
What's that?
The biggest websites in the entire world. Anyway.
So you don't need to rent porn movies anymore.
Well, they don't even make movies. Nobody wants to watch movies. But anyway,
so what
was
they
in
watching?
Two.
Hang on. What are they watching now if they're not watching porn movies?
They're watching like...
scenes.
Like just homemade filmed scenes done.
Like Reader's Wives.
No, it's just porn, but there's no storyline. It's just like going at it. Okay. Oh, Geordie, come on. Keep up with the times.
Soz. I've got some porn to catch up on.
So he went on to do two porn films. The first one was called John Wayne Bobbitt, Uncut. Oh. And the second one was, wait for it, Frankenpenis.
Oh.
Not even joking. And then he went on to form a band called Severed Parts.
Oh, now, come on. Who's gonna buy those albums?
Well, nobody, because the band didn't take off.
No, but, not surprised.
So, but anyway, if you're actually wondering what happened to Lorena, which you were,
yeah,
she went to court and she went on to testify that for years she'd been raped, sodomized, physically and mentally abused by John Wayne, her husband. And it had been escalating over the years. And that night, she just snapped. And then after 7 hours of deliberation by the jury, they found her not guilty due to insanity. And she had to do this like 45-day evaluation, which I think must have been like a psychological evaluation, after which she was done. She was out. She was free to go. Yep.
Okay. Whereas what John about him, Wayne, though?
Yeah, not a good dude. So basically... after the band went nowhere.
But he was riding high on all the, you know, on his misfortune.
Yeah, he was. You know, like riding high
turned
on those.
Turned into a cash cow.
Well, in the years following, he was charged with battery of numerous women on numerous occasions.
What a piece of work.
Yeah, and he got like done for theft and he ended up in prison. Whereas Lorena went on to found a charity to help victims of domestic violence.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. So I think they made the right decision in the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, what a great story. Thanks, Michelle. I'm sure Callum's so thrilled now that he listens to this podcast. It's teaching people. It's educational.
It's history. You've got to know your history.
History. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And then, as you were saying before...
we had one reader.
We had one listener. Reader. One Reader's Wives. That's what I keep thinking now because you said it.
I'm sorry.
One listener who actually sent in the story to you, but I thought I would give it a go to highlight what's happened in their Valentine's Day love story. Not that it doesn't really have that much to do with Valentine's Day. It's more love story.
It's a love story.
But just to let you know, I changed their names because, you know. Anyway.
We'll see why, I suppose.
This is the story of Jack and Darcy. So it starts back in 2014 when Jack was at Manchester Airport with a group of lads and they were all heading to Tallinn in Estonia for a stag do. It was an early flight and sort of one of those 6 a.m. absolute fucking nightmare flights that nobody wants to get, but you always do. And Jack was in the queue lining up to get on the flight and he overheard a phone conversation that a woman near him in the queue was having. You know, it sounded quite heated. Jack actually says it sounded like this woman was having an argument on the phone with her boyfriend because she was there saying things like, by the time I get back, I want you gone, and get your shit out of my flat by the time I get back. So, I mean, it sounds kind of fucking serious. And Jack was eavesdropping on the convo. And he said he sort of, you know, had listened in and it registered with him. But, you know, as he moved along the queue and you know, towards boarding the actual plane, he sort of just didn't really think about it. Until he got on the flight and realized he was sitting next to the woman who'd been on the phone.
Okay.
So they are right at the front of the plane where on this flight, must have been one of those small planes, there were only two seats. So it was just him and her and she was at the window and he was on the aisle. Now Darcy says she remembers she'd just gotten settled into her seat when this guy boards the plane and drops his bag on the seat next to her. And she said she was there thinking, ugh, you know, okay. Guy sitting next to me because I think at this point, she's hoping she won't have anybody sitting next to her so she can just sort of...
She's probably in a bad mood considering the phone call she'd had.
Yeah, she just wants to chill after having a shitty conversation. Yeah. And when you're on a flight, it's so much nicer when you're not sitting next to anybody because you spread out, you put shit everywhere, you know, you can lie down. So I think she was a bit bummed that someone was sitting next to her. She also says she was knackered because she hadn't slept a wink because the night before she'd been arguing all night with her boyfriend and she just wanted a few hours peace on the plane to sleep, especially because she was, you know, going to Tallinn, she was going to a wedding and she knew it was just going to be a big day ahead with lots of drinking and socializing and just having a nice time with her friends. But then Jack, being a social type of chap, he starts chit-chatting to her and
he's a chitty chatter.
Yes, and but according to him, he said it was just sort of general flight chit-chat to start with. Yeah. Until they both had seen this guy. He basically spilled this hot coffee all over his crotch.
Who's this guy?
Some guy on the plane.
Like another passenger.
Just another passenger. And he'd spilled coffee on his crotch and he had the flight attendant basically patting down his penis.
Pat him down?
Yeah. And they were both laughing, going like, look at this dude just trying to get a
to
free
the left,
feel up.
To the right, in the centre. Goodness me.
And it turns out sort of, you know, they both sort of giggled about it and that was the icebreaker that led them to having a proper conversation where Darcy also just said to Jack, listen, I swear that fucking bloke with the coffee on him has been following me around the airport. And Jack was like, what do you mean? And she said, well, everywhere I looked in the airport, he was just there. You know, he was right behind me causing a scene through passport control. And then he got in the lift with me. Jack says it was at this point that he sort of latched onto that comment and thought he'd try to be a bit funny. And he turned to her and said words to the effect of, you've only got carry-on luggage, a lazy cow. Why did you get in the lift? Ugh. And she was like, actually, I'm just coming off the back of quite a bad relapse. I've got MS. At which point Jack says he just felt like shit. And he sort of just thought, nice move, Jack. Yeah, he's like, oh, you know, mood killer. So he wasn't really too sure that this nice, you know, girl next to him would still be interested in chatting to him. But long story short, the pair spent the next 3 hours chatting away. And when they landed, they went their separate ways. But not before Jack did something that was quite out of character. He said to Darcy, like, bye now, have an amazing weekend. And by the way, can I get your number? So they exchanged numbers. And
smooth moves.
I know, he's got the moves. Smooth. So they exchanged numbers and he says he texted Darcy a couple of times over the course of the weekend, but they didn't see each other because, you know, he was having like a wild time on the stag do and Darcy was just, you know, with her mates at the wedding. So when it came to flying back, as chance would have it, they were once again on the same flight.
No.
Mm-hmm. And okay. So they were in the airport and Darcy spotted Jack in the smoking room at the airport. And I think she wanted to say hi, but she realized she didn't know his name because even though they'd swapped numbers, she'd put him in her phone as something weird, like I don't know, guy from the plane, or rude chap. Rude guy who made fun of my MS, you know, who knows. So she was like, oh shit, I want to say hi to that guy, but I don't know his name. But anyway, she went up and then she was like, oh, hi. And she introduced her friend and he was a real gentleman because when she said, oh, you know, this is my friend. I want to say LaSquisha, but it wasn't LaSquisha.
LaSquisha?
I don't know. Anyway, she said, oh, this is my friend. And he's like, hi, I'm Jack. And she was like, oh, thank God. Now I know his name. So one by one, all the friends that she'd been at the wedding with all got on flights back to back to London or wherever they were.
Bye, LaSquisha. Have a great flight.
Bye, LaSquisha. Bye, Squishies. and then she's just basically left in the airport with Jack and all of his mates waiting to board the flight back to Manchester.
All these like absolutely hanging stags.
Yep. All the lads just
fucking, no shower, yeah, looking ropey, smelling like a brewery.
Yep. So it's just her and these boys.
Nice.
And she boards the plane and gets to her seat. and then realizes there's this little boy sitting in her seat. And she obviously was not thrilled about this because I think she was kind of hanging too. And she just really was not up for having a kid sitting next to her. But she's a very polite person. And she says to the dad, "Oh, excuse me, your son's in my seat." But then she sees this little kid. He's like looking out the window and he's looking at all the planes. And so she's like, "Oh, don't worry. Look, I'll sit on the aisle seat." And she just sits down. Then Jack gets on the plane with his mates. He doesn't sit next to her, but he's in the same row, in the middle seat on the other side. So at this point, Darcy's not feeling great from her wild wedding weekend, and she's just sort of sitting there with her head down. But she feels these eyes burning into the side of her head. So she looks up, and there's this woman just staring at her. So she's like, "Are you okay? Do you need help?" Because I think at this point, this woman is kind of freaking her out. And then she puts two and two together and she's like, "Oh, is that your kid? Is that your husband?" This woman's like, "Yeah, that's my family." And so Darcy offers to swap seats with this woman, which means she's now sitting next to Jack.
Okay.
Yes. And this is where Jack is like, "Yeah, Darcy claims she didn't manufacture this, but basically she moved people around the flight so she could sit near me." But there's some disagreement on that.
Okay.
But anyway, they fly back to Manchester and Jack says they talked the whole way back and at one point even made each other cry because they were both incredibly emotional after a big weekend. And probably lots of booze. And, you know, they were just talking about family and the conversation got quite heavy. So I think at this point, even though they don't really know each other, they're connecting on this sort of deeper level. And I think they're both sort of starting to realize that potentially there could be something else going on. Yeah.
Right.
Because, you know, Jack is single and it's clear that Darcy is in the process of ending things with her boyfriend. So the plane lands and Jack goes back to Lincolnshire, where he lives, and Darcy goes back to Manchester. And then over the course of the next few weeks, the pair start texting one another. And then a fortnight later, Jack invites Darcy to a party and they just have this really nice weekend at this like mud hut party together.
Oh, that sounds fun.
I know. It sounds really good. You know, they sort of think, "Let's see each other again soon." And Jack,
parties are fun, aren't they?
Oh God, I miss them. I fucking miss a good party. It's been too long. Just getting smashed anyway.
Getting smashed.
So after they'd gotten smashed on this weekend at the Mud Hut.
They had a great time.
Yeah, I'm sure they had a great time. Jack decided he was going to drive to Manchester the following Monday after he'd been to the wedding of the guy whose stag do he'd been on when they first met. And she was off to a festival. So Jack took the Monday off work and decided to drive up from Lincolnshire to Manchester with this fancy little hamper of treats that he knew that she would like. So he just picked up some bits like pickled walnuts, some nice gin, some like good cheese and some cured meats.
Oh, how romantic. I know. I think that's really nice.
He does sound like a lovely romantic chap. You know, he drove up to Manchester after he'd like put this little hamper together and knocked on Darcy's door. Now, I say he knocked on her door, but I just want to point out that at this point, Darcy lived in a gated community where, first of all, you had to get buzzed in through the front gate and then you had to get buzzed in again to gain entry into the block. And then you had to knock on the door. So it's quite a secure complex. Right. So when Jack arrived, Darcy was on the phone to her ex, even though, you know, he'd moved out and Darcy, you know, had like asked him to clear all his stuff out. But as she'd sort of said to him on the phone that time at the airport, like, "Get your fucking shit out of my house."
Yeah.
There were still a few bits in the flat that belonged to him. And apparently it was his phone charger that he wanted to come over and get. So, you know, Jack's overhearing this and he says to Darcy, "Listen, no problem. I'll leave the hamper of bits here and I'll disappear around the corner and have a Guinness at the pub. So just give me a call when things get sorted." So Jack heads off to the pub thinking he'll be in there for like half an hour.
Mm.
2.5 hours later.
Oh my God.
Yeah. She texts and said, "He's gone. You can come back now. You know, it's all fine." So he finishes up his drink.
Nice of Jack to wait all that time.
Because how many Guinnesses? Well, actually, that's you can have as many as you want. But how many? Yeah. You get a bit bored. You get a bit bored in the pub flying. On your own.
Yeah.
So he finishes up his drink and heads to her place. And, you know, he goes through all the buzzing in palaver and gets to her place. And she lets him in and closes the door. And he just gives her a hug because, you know, she's probably, like, been through the ringer for 2.5 hours with her ex. But then, out of fucking nowhere, the front door gets kicked in and in bursts the fucking ex-boyfriend.
Oh, my God.
Right. So at this point, Darcy shoves Jack into her bedroom and she says to him, listen to me, whatever you hear, whatever you think is going on out here, do not come out of this bedroom.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, and she just, that poor man.
I know. And she like pushes him into the bedroom and shuts the door, at which point,
oh, no.
Yeah, the ex comes flying down the hallway and then goes straight into the kitchen and makes a fucking beeline
sandwich
for the knives. No! Georgie! And he makes a sandwich. Goes for the brown lemonade.
I'm so sorry. This is really dramatic and I've ruined it. Sorry. Carry on. What did he make?
He went for the fucking kitchen knives.
Oh no.
He's flown into this house.
Violent maniac.
She's pushed him in. Pushed Jack into the bedroom and he's gone, fuck this, gone straight to the kitchen. Oh. And dude grabs not one, but two long, pointy fucking kitchen knives. And he's screaming that he knows someone is in the flat because turns out.
Yeah, because it was all secure. How did he get in? It was supposed to be a secure unit.
Well, turns out X never left the car park. He was waiting inside the gated complex and he'd seen Jack come into the flat and he'd put two
He knows he's in there.
And he realised, fuck, that dude is going to see Darcy. And he fucking kicks the door down, the front door. He doesn't let himself in. He's fucking kicked it in.
Boom. Shakalaka.
Boom. So Jack is in the bedroom while the ex is there with two fucking knives. And he's just going for Darcy. And listen, from her story, she's a fighter. Because even though he's got these knives, she knows she has to keep him away from the bedroom where Jack is because she knows that if her ex gets in that bedroom, he's going to fucking kill Jack.
Right.
And this is not just like, oh, he's going to kill him. Dude has two fucking knives. He's he's on the warpath.
But how did she know he wasn't going to kill her? How does Jack know this guy's not going to kill Darcy?
I don't know. But Jack was really sternly told, do not come out of this fucking bedroom.
Right.
And
it must have been so hard for him if he's hearing smash bang wallet.
I would be there going, fuck, I've got to get out and help.
Yes.
But what he does, he's clever. He gets his phone out. But not before Jack is fucking tearing up the place. I mean, he is...
Jack or
the
other boy?
Sorry, the ex. Yeah. The ex is tearing up the place. And I mean, she's fighting tooth and nail. Darcy's fighting tooth and nail with fucking the ex, trying desperately not to get stabbed. And look, I don't know how she dealt with this guy because she loved him once, you know?
Yeah.
And he's coming at her with two knives in both fucking hands.
Oh,
and, you know, he's destroying the place. So there's this massive glass dining table which he flipped over and it smashed everywhere, which meant the whole place was covered in glass. And he's trying to get at her and she's obviously like ducking and diving because quite honestly I don't know what I would do if someone was coming at me with two knives. But credit to her, she's fighting back. Like, she's going head to head with this guy and everything in this flat is getting destroyed. The TV is smashed on the ground, her laptop is smashed open and he's like stepped on it and left this boot print on the screen.
Oh my
and
goodness.
He's just smashing shit up. But she's managed to grab her cell phone, like her mobile, and she's trying to call the police, but he rips it out of her hand and just chucks it away, at which point she manages to get hold of one of the knives. And in order to kind of have it not be used against her, she just gets it and like stabs
it into
the ground and it breaks, right?
Okay.
So,
so she didn't cut her hand or anything?
No, no. But he's down to one knife now at this point. Uh-huh. And, you know, she's saying they are physically fighting each other and he's like wrestled her to the ground and they're rolling on the floor, which is covered in broken glass.
Blimey.
Yeah. And she said the only two thoughts that were going through her head were, I need to keep that blade away from me and I need to keep my ex away from Jack.
Yeah.
So at this point, Jack is still in the bedroom. And like you said, fuck knows what he's thinking because, like, think about it. He's in that bedroom listening to tables being smashed, TVs being thrown across the room, all this screaming and yelling, but he's been told not to come out of that bedroom. So he calls the police. Smart move.
Good.
And Darcy says, fuck knows how he remembered where she lived because he'd never been there before, but he gave the police the address and, you know.
To be fair, he'd been there twice because he'd been there once, gone out to the pub, then gone back again.
That is true. That is true. Still.
So it's probably burned on his... Although when you're in a situation like that...
Your mind goes blank. Jack's called the police, right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Darcy and her ex are getting closer and closer to that fucking bedroom door. And all the while, Darcy's just thinking, I cannot let him near Jack. And listen, while Jack is on the phone to the police, like giving the address and whatever else they need, the ex can hear him on the phone. And he gets his fucking knife and he starts stabbing at the bedroom door like something out of The Shining. And Jack's...
Oh my goodness.
I know. And Jack says he remembers that as he was on the phone to the police and he's obviously like got his weight against the door trying to like...
But
keep him from getting in.
The knife could go through.
The knife went through the fucking door. And he said he could hear the whistling of the knife coming right through the door right near his ear. So honestly, I mean, it is a fucking miracle he didn't get stabbed. Insane that, and again, a miracle that Darcy did not get stabbed. Because from what I understand, neither of them had any like stabbing injuries.
That's incredible.
Yeah. But this fucking door was like one of those cheap, shitty internal doors, you know, and this knife just went through it like
butter.
Well,
he's already kicked a fucking door down.
I know. Dude's got brute force. Like I said, unbelievably, I think neither of them were hurt. Because at this point, he knows police are on their way, the ex-stars.
Okay. So.
And Darcy is like, they've called the police. The police arrive with armed
squad. Armed response.
Armed rescue. And, afterwards, they were just sitting there like, what the fuck just happened? And, you know, forensics came and, you know, they were dusting the place. And he said they stayed up all night. They ate the walnuts, drank the gin, like the hamper miraculously survived. And then he just said to her, I don't want you to be here. I want you to come back with me.
Yeah.
And look, at this point, you've got to remember, this was the third time they'd seen each other. So basically the airports at the weekend and now this third time.
And now this
time,
is the third
they're
time.
They're not together.
So he's asking her. No, they're not together.
They're not together. And he says at this point, you know, they'd kissed, but they hadn't taken things further. But he's there going, fuck, you know, this
They've
is
They've been
like,
through this experience together.
Yeah. And he says, Very come back bonding. With me. So she jumps in the van and she goes back to Lincolnshire with him. And she stays down there for a week while the police try to find the ex, who's basically, like, disappeared off the radar.
Yeah.
And during this time, he starts fucking stalking her on the phone and his mum as well, like, harassing poor Darcy, trying to get her to, like, retract the charges. But it's too late. And anyway, then they finally find him. He's been picked up in a stolen car and he gets thrown into Strange Ways, which is high security men's prison in Manchester.
Yeah.
Also, one of my favorite Smith's
albums.
Yes, I know.
Strange Ways, Here We Come.
I know. I always think of that. A Girl in a Coma.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, so he's in Strange Ways, and he was also phoning Darcy from Strange Ways, which I actually don't think is allowed. But anyway,
it shouldn't be.
So he's in prison. She's down in Lincolnshire. And they both realize, like, obviously everything they've gone through, but now that she's down there, they're just really in love. And like within a couple of months, they've bought their dog, Kenny, together.
Aww.
A couple of months after that, they decide they're going to buy a house together. And then 6 months after they first met, on her birthday, he proposes to her.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So, you know, there is a happy ending.
Well, that
ending
is beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, it's not beautiful. It's horrific and it's horrifying. But wow, what a way to get together.
I know.
Right?
But look, I mean, there, like you say, there is some. It's a little bit scary because obviously, they have changed their names, not just like.
Okay. For the story.
For the story, but they have changed their name. You know, they're not on Facebook. They're off all the socials. And Darcy says she still lives with this element of fear after the experience.
Oh, no.
And that, you know, they lock their doors in a way that no one can ever get in. And,
yeah,
you know, Darcy won't go
Good
back to
systems.
Manchester. And she says she still walks with, you know, looking over her shoulder. And she says that over the years, her ex has tried to contact her, but she doesn't respond. And
oh,
she
dear.
Thinks that basically if she ever saw him again and she was with Jack,
okay.
she thinks without question he would attack her. And she says that's a really heavy thing to live with. So,
yeah,
it is a happy ending in that they both came out of this like harrowing ordeal and found love at the end of it. But also, scary shit.
Well, look, I just really hope that it all works out for them and that guy never, ever bumps into them.
I know.
Please God. Listen, Michelle, while we were talking about that, I suddenly had this very vivid image in my mind of being in a lift and an axe smashing at it and you were with me and it's a real thing that happened to you and I in a lift in Stoke Newington after a party, Jurgen's party.
Yes.
Do you remember? We got trapped in a lift.
Yes,
and the fire brigade had to come and smash it open with bloody axes.
Oh my God, how did I forget that?
Well, I forgot it too. It's just when you were talking about that knife whistling through, I was like, oh my God, wait. We were very drunk. We were standing at a lift. Was it just the two of us
yes.
or was somebody else in there with us?
No, I think it was just the two of us. We were leaving the party. Oh my God.
And we couldn't leave.
And we were going.
No, there must have been somebody else in there with us.
I don't know.
How did we get rescued?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. I don't know. I can't remember how we got out of that. I was too drunk. Fucking hell. You've got a good memory. Jesus Christ.
We were in a lift. Jurgen's house in Stoke Newington. And I'm sure somebody else was there because they managed to get word back to Jurgen. We're in the lift. We can't get out. The doors won't open.
Oh
and the fire brigade
God.
Were called. And they had to axe it open.
Oh my God.
It was horrifying.
We've been through some stuff, Geordie. We've been through some stuff.
And that's why we're still together to this day.
And happy Valentine's Day to you.
Well, happy Palentine's Day Aww. To you, Michelle.
Okay.
And Galentine's Day.
Oh, happy Galentine's.
That.
Love ya.
Long live love.
Yeah.
I love you.
Oh, I love you more.
Oh. Well, listen, guys, I reckon we've got to wrap this up.
I know.
This love fest. But don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, watch the videos on YouTube, watch the videos on Instagram, like things on Facebook,
tell
respond
your friends.
To things. If they ask you to do something for us, for God's sake, just bloody do
we
it.
We want your stories.
What's wrong with you?
You're interesting. Send us your tales.
Thank you. I mean, we've got some rich, rich sources of info. Thank you to Darcy and Jack.
Thank you so much.
We've also got the repeated stories coming at us from Hazel, the psychic real estate agent.
Oh, more from Hazel.
I'm sure we'll revisit at some point.
Oh my God, I can't wait to hear Hazel's stories.
No,
I love her stories.
Exactly. We've had lovely Linda and her battle against, you know, all odds.
Yeah, we have. So, you know, thanks
so
everybody.
We do have some good listeners who do contribute. We do love you, really, eavesdroppers.
We do.
Just keep eavesdropping. That's all you need to do.
Eavesdropping. Drop it. Eavesdropping.